futuro.
Hey family, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and it's Friday, and it's ITT Sound Off.
Let's get to our first topic, people, which is the latest from Capitol Hill. So on Wednesday, President Joe Biden gave an almost two-hour-long news conference. That was marking 1 year since he took office. He talked about his stalled legislation, foreign policy, the pandemic, his goals for the second year of his term. I'm speaking purposefully, kind of slowly. It would have helped to have something like this right out the gate.
I'm glad you disclosed why you were talking that way, because, yeah, all of a sudden there's a presidency. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, here it is.
So there's a lot of sighing that's going on. He did call out Republicans for holding up legislation. We've been trying to tell you that for a while, yeah, that this was happening. On Wednesday night, the Senate, in fact, failed to get the 60 votes needed to pass voting rights legislation. And a vote to change the filibuster rules also failed, which would have allowed for the bills to be passed with a simple majority.
Correct.
Right? Kind of like democracy, you know, majority. Okay. The voting bills would have required states to get approval from the Department of Justice before changing voting laws. Super important. It would have also expanded voting by mail. And it would have made, this is my favorite, an election day holiday, national holiday. I think in Puerto Rico it is, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, Julio.
It's a day off. You know, it's like places where you have a day off to vote. The theory being that people will go out and vote because they don't have to go to work.
You don't have to get there, you know, by 6 a.m. before 9 o'clock at night. So we had a big moment here at Latino Rebels. Our Washington correspondent, Pablo Manriquez, had an opportunity to ask Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell about voting rights in the United States, the entirety of the United States, on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And this is what Mitch McConnell said.
What's your message for voters of color who are concerned that without the John L. Lewis Voting Rights Act, they're not going to be able to vote in the midterm?
Well, the concern is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Did you catch that?
Yeah. He might have just said, oh, I'm sorry. African-Americans, like all Americans, are experiencing. I mean, he could have corrected himself.
I just want to put it on record, and CNN got this Thursday. His spokesman corrected him after all the blowback, because if you're on any online forum yesterday or watching the news, or this is all what people were talking about. And there were actually all these amazing tweets, Maria, of Black families saying, I am American, and taking pictures of their kids and their parents, and I vote and I matter. And NAACP jumped in. And so Mitch McConnell, spokesman, just before I get your take, said, oh, he meant to say other Americans.
Well, why didn't Mitch McConnell say it, first of all? I mean, why didn't he come out and take the microphone and say, hey, let me make a correction?
And can I show you another little nugget? Because, you know.
Well, yeah, because we have some inside scoop on what happened here. So what is the inside scoop?
So Latino Rebels is part of Futuro Media. Pablo has a press pass with Futuro Media. When I talked to Pablo about this on Thursday, he actually saw McConnell in the halls of, you know, by where the trains are. That's where all the senators gather. And he actually asked him the same question about an hour before the press conference. And McConnell said, you can ask that question at the press conference. So,
and let me ask you, the reason why was, did Pablo not have his microphone, or he just was like,
no, he was there.
So he could have answered it.
Exactly. He could have answered it there. Pablo was there. He had his phone ready to record him. Like, that's what he does. He literally like stalks out that area and talks to senators. That's how he gets a lot of the quotes for the stories that we do. But he said, come back at the press conference. So he had an hour to prepare the quote. And that was what came out of his mouth. What are your thoughts about all this and voting rights? Because it died. All of a sudden, voting rights is dead again with Democrats.
I have to say, Julio, as I'm getting ready to leave the Dominican Republic, I've been here for 5 weeks. We extended our trip because of Omicron and, you know, empty grocery shelves and not wanting to be more of a burden on New York City. And I'm really just kind of pondering what's happening in the United States. How is this possible that this is happening? You know, we have been covering this for, what, 5 years now?
Yeah, we just had a conversation with Ellie earlier this week about this.
Right. So it's like the slow motion roll, you know, the attempted coup d'etat that is perpetuated. And when we say coup d'etat, when you're taking away voting rights, when you are denying the basic expression of democracy, it is taking away power, you know, so it's different expressions of coup d'etat. Like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And I guess you know, I'm sad. I'm very worried. I also recognize my privilege. As journalists, we're going to keep on doing our work, but it's the American arc of injustice and the slow motion grinding of white supremacy. And by the way, it seems like mainstream middle of the road presidents like Joe Biden were like, no, Republicans are in general good
people.
Yeah,
let's work together.
Like, they'll come around. We'll work together.
And exactly. It's like that didn't
No, go no, out. No. If you had a doubt, ain't no doubt about what's happening here. So la luta continua. That's like my new kind of mantra. How are you feeling about it? I mean, before we move on.
What were Democrats thinking? I just point to Elie Mystal, what he said with us on Tuesday. This should have happened on January 21st, 2021. Let's move on to our second topic. Latest news out of Puerto Rico.
Yes.
So on Tuesday, this is a big deal. This was actually a momentous occasion in the history of the debt crisis in Puerto Rico. A federal judge approved a restructuring plan that would actually cut Puerto Rico's public debt down by around 80% and would end their five-year-long bankruptcy. So the island has been in this economic crisis. I like to call it the island colony. That's been exacerbated by natural disasters like Hurricanes Maria and Irma and the coronavirus pandemic. And previously, I mean, this crisis began, you know, in the middle aughts. So this is an ongoing thing. I've written a lot about it. You know, it's a combination of Puerto Rico's political class sort of marrying up to Wall Street and Washington, and everyone was spending. If you really want to get a good breakdown on this, there's a Latino USA in the vault that Marlon Bishop and I did that really dove into the debt crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of like your one-on-ones. So this plan is set to go into effect on March 15th and was proposed by La Junta, which is the Financial Oversight Board appointed to the island in 2016 by former President Barack Obama in a lame duck session. Bipartisan PROMESA legislation. So there's also some controversy with the board because their austerity measures have led to financial cuts to essential services like education and healthcare. Also, and this is a fact, Maria, attorneys that helped with the debt restructuring, like they were the ones that would present to the judge over the last 5 years to make the cases as to why the debt should be restructured, to kind of present the board's position and the government of Puerto Rico. They made $1 billion. Okay, and that's according to NBC News.
That's where, you know, when you think of Puerto Rico, the word fleecing, and when you're talking about, like, you know, the political class, in Puerto Rico, desafortunadamente, the level of corruption and of just fleecing la pobre isla.
Exactly. And but listen, the reality is that, you know, even though everyone's like, oh, this is a win for Puerto Rico and the board and La Junta and the bondholders, the reality is the island still faces a debt of $7.4 billion. So this plan notes that Puerto Rico has enough resources to pay the debt through 2034, which is 12 years from now. But a lot of people are saying this could actually take decades, and it's going to be on the backs of the Puerto Rican people. And critics of the plan are worried that this is just going to worsen the conditions here. The big hope of the economic miracle of Puerto Rico is cryptocurrency and billionaires. So not to shout out another Latino USA story, but Puerto Crypto. You should listen to that. But listen, a friend of both of ours, Juan Gonzalez, who's a Democracy Now! Co-host, spoke about this restructuring plan on Tuesday. So let's take a listen.
In terms of saving the workers from losing their pensions, this has been a major step forward. In terms of whether it really resolves the financial crisis of Puerto Rico going forward, that remains to be seen, because this agreement is an adjustment of a previous agreement that happened before COVID. And then, of course, COVID made the economic conditions in Puerto Rico, as in much of the rest of the country, worse. So there was some victories here as a result of constant public pressure on the control board. But this control board is going to be in power. It's already been in power for more than 5 years. It will have to be in power for at least 4 years of balanced budgets before it actually leaves the island, if it ever leaves the island.
It was so problematic, Julio, to see those headlines like Puerto Rico's debt resolved. You know, yeah. I was like, okay, wait, yeah, it sounds too good to be true. Means it is too good to be true. Because as you're saying, Puerto Rico is still carrying this massive debt.
Yeah.
I mean, I would also point to, if you haven't listened to La Brega so that you can understand the historical context and why Julio calls it the island colony and why everything that happens on the island in terms of its economics, it's a colony. So therefore, it is not sovereign. And it's pointed out, it's made it to seem like, ay Dios mío, the Puerto Rican people, they cannot figure it out. Like, what's the matter?
Right.
And it's just like,
yeah.
Do you understand the economic relationship of the mainland to Puerto Rico?
With the elite, with the political class. It's the 1% of Puerto Rico with that relationship you're talking about, for sure.
And all of the laws that allowed for no federal taxes to have to be paid at all. And so then there's this just very unequal sentiment. And it's the narrative. I mean, that's what I think is upsetting.
You're absolutely right. The narrative is like, it's a victory. And what's happened is that ordinary Puerto Ricans who are the soul or the pride of where, you know, the island that raised me, that shaped me, they're the ones that are literally going to foot the bill. And then you have bondholders, these board members, you know, the executive director of the board, Natalie Jaresko, makes a ridiculous amount of money. I think she makes like $600,000, some crazy figure. And she has like private bodyguards and everything. So she gets benefits that are almost like, you know, near $1 million. It's just so gross. But, you know, but you're absolutely right, Maria. It's like, this was your problem, Puerto Rico. But, you know, when you live in a colony, you're not in control.
That's just sad. All right. Well, listen, I'm really glad that we were able to talk about Puerto Rico and that we will continue to report on that. And now we're going to move on to our final topic, which is a COVID update. So, on Tuesday, the Biden administration launched a website for Americans to order their free at-home COVID tests. It's at covidtests.gov.
Yeah.
We jumped on it immediately. We were like, yes, let's do this. But, you know, it's like you're limited to just 4 per household.
Yeah.
I was just like, why only 4? Like, you could get 4 every 2 weeks, or it was just kind of like 4.
Cuatro, y move on.
Exactly. They're supposed to go out in late January. Again, might have been better to do this, I don't know, early December, mid-December,
November?
But okay, November,
maybe.
You know, when we first started hearing about Omicron and everybody's like, it's happening over there. It's like, no, we are a global community. So there's all kinds of issues that are coming up. Like if you live in a multifamily residence or apartments where one resident has already used the address, you may not be able to get more of them. Not everybody, of course, has internet access to order. This is my pet peeve, is not everybody has.
True.
The internet. So Dr. Ebony Jade Hilton, who's an anesthesiologist and a medical contributor to MSNBC, was on Zerlina Maxwell's show. She's a friend of the pod. She has a show on Peacock. And this is what the doctor had to say about where we are in the pandemic.
Unfortunately, when we're looking at saying, well, if we just infect everyone, then we can get to that point of being endemic. Well, in that infecting everyone, literally last week alone, 1 million children, nearly 1 million children were infected with COVID-19. That's in 1 week. The entire total pandemic, we've only had 9.5 million cases for children. And in this 1 week alone, we got 10% of that number. That is a huge issue when we're talking about the fact that we're stressing out children's bodies who haven't fully developed yet. So when we start to cheer and say even hospitalizations are starting to decrease, if our case numbers are high and our hospitalizations are decreasing, that's likely because the children are making up that number. And since November, nearly 1 in every 4 cases has been a child.
Wow.
Julio, I have to tell you that somebody who I know in Connecticut just told me, oh, I'm just getting over COVID. I'm feeling really weak, you know, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, please take care of yourself. I was like, you were vaccinated, right? No response. And then I'm just thinking about the people who I know in our orbit, people who we know who are choosing not to get vaccinated. And for people who have, you know, medical reasons, this is different. And I thought of the reason why I got vaccinated, which was, it's not about me. It's about all of us. It's a community effort. It has to be. So I'm freaking out because I'm leaving a very safe place in the Dominican Republic.
Where you're like socially distant. You're away from people.
We kind of live outdoors. So it's
You're outdoors. It's safe. And you're not like in a city that can be a little bit more crowded, right?
And I love New York City. And I'm thrilled to be going back to my home and to Harlem and such. But the notion that, you know, you're just getting 4 tests. I'm like, what is that? So you don't leave the house except for 4 times to get, like, I don't even understand. Only 4 tests. And we have been asking for leadership. We have been saying, do something bold. But you could have done that a year ago. Do you understand? Yeah. That's what we're saying, that this is very frustrating because we're frustrated.
And then what's happened in this whole thing, I mean, first, the notion of the kids, I couldn't imagine having kids under five right now, or even just school-aged children, and seeing what's happening. We're seeing it a lot in places. During the last couple of weeks, I've seen more cases, you know, when you get your anecdotes, kids that I know have been infected. But it just seems like we're just kind of like, oh, it's mild. Oh, it's going to peak. Oh, you know, here's some home tests. Like, we're done. It's almost like this country is done. And the president, I think, has almost this obligation to lead this way. And they've kind of bungled it, you know, and that's a big thing here. It's like the messaging has been all over the place. I know we're tired. I know we're exhausted, but it's just not resonating. I don't know how we get through it.
It's very interesting that both you and I, who are highly critical and understand deeply the nuances of politics and how it's used, it's weird that we're just saying what people have been asking for is leadership, movement, determination. We always understood that there was going to be resistance. So, yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad.
Póngase las pilas, right? Yeah.
Póngase las pilas and, like, you know, get the Energizer Bunny and have him running like 24/7. Like, I don't know. It's like something, please. Oh, and yeah. Then at the same time, we have to take care of ourselves and know that we have responsibility and we have to take care of each other, which is why the news this week of losing another great Andre Leon Talley, the fashion icon, former Vogue creative director and editor, passed away on Tuesday at the age of 73. Mm. So another Black human being gone way too soon, whether it's Lonnie Gunier, Bell Hooks, or now Andre Leon Talley, yeah. Too soon. You know him because he was always wearing these extraordinary capes. I think he was 6'6".
So he had presence.
Yeah. I remember, Julio, the first time I saw him, it was at a conference. And we were all just kind of, now we had broken down for lunch and people were like standing in line and getting their little lunch. And I was like, oh my God, it's Andre Leon Talley. And I just put my plate down and I walked up to him and I said, sir, please excuse me. I just need to introduce myself and say thank you for being who you are and for being the presence. And just, I love everything about you. And I said, you know, my name is Maria Hinojosa. And he said, oh, come out of here, girl. Give me a hug.
That's awesome.
If you don't know who Andre Leon Talley is, look him up and know that he is part of the great arc of American history in fashion. May you rest in peace, Andre. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres!
Remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. Also, remember, you can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts on. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In The Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harsha Nahata, Lisa Salinas, and our fellow Sarah Hershander, with editorial support from Mike Sargent and Charlotte Mangin. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie Lebeau, Julia Caruso, and Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode. Dear listener, acuérdate, no te vayas. Have a good weekend. Take care of yourselves. Stay safe. Stay warm. I'll see you back on the mainland. Bye.
Peace, y'all.
Maria's coming back.
It's really wonderful to descend into the depths of hell. So, yeah.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.